Many of them are low income, but also we have a lot of students from local universities who get health care at the Fenway. And what I'm going to talk about is the Summer Institute and the Center for Population Studies and LGBT Health, which Judy directs. This institute or center, which is part of the Fenway Institute, is funded by the National Institute for Child Health and Human Development. And it brings together resources that we have at the Fenway Institute, as well as resources at Boston University School of Public Health, and the Intercollegiate, Interuniversity Consortium for Political and Social Research at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, ICPSR. With the funding from NICHD, we've been able to increase connections among scientists based at universities around the country, as well as develop a sort of a junior scientist mentoring program with graduate students and early career researchers. And this has helped us to increase research and publications, as well as make a lot of data publicly available to community-based researchers on LGBT demography and public health. So the purpose of the Center for Population Research and LGBT Health is to build the research base to fill critical knowledge gaps about sexual and gender minority populations, or lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people, specifically regarding their health. This is increasingly important as we see Healthy People 2020 identifying eliminating LGBT health disparities as a priority for the nation's healthcare infrastructure. And with the Institute of Medicine report last year on LGBT health, prioritizing this population, their disparities, and the gaps in knowledge. So the three thematic areas of initial attention that we've taken at the Center for Population Research and LGBT Health are looking at behavioral research on the sexual transmission of HIV, looking at LGBT families and households, including same-sex couple families from the U.S. Census, and then demographic aspects of LGBT health, morbidity, disability, and mortality. So basically a focus on disparities. The strategies that we've employed include faculty support, developing a network of researchers interested in these issues around the country, data access, building a dedicated archive of LGBT population data sets in conjunction with ICPSR at the University of Michigan, and then training and mentoring, like I said, the sort of next generation of LGBT health population scientists. So the faculty support includes holding routine meetings for to sort of share the latest information about grant funding opportunities and so on, providing an internet platform for document sharing, a bibliographic database of references in LGBT health. There's an increasing body of literature being published on these issues, which is great, and just keeping up with it is a task in itself. Support with the grant writing, and support with research working groups. So one of the working groups is a transgender research working group. This is one of the very much understudied populations within the LGBT population. In terms of data access, we've built a PRISM data archive at ICPSR to make available existing data sets with LGBT health-related measures. So these include the National Survey of Family Growth, the NHANES survey, the General Social Survey, and others. Developing new data sets to better understand what affects LGBT health. So I mentioned that we have 10,000 patients who identify as LGBT out of our 20,000 patient database. So we have one of the biggest LGBT patient databases in the world, and that there may be a way to use that data to better understand this population, how to provide clinically competent health care to it, and how to reduce disparities. And then we also advocate for adding measures to government-funded surveys, as well as in clinical settings. Tomorrow at 8:30, we're going to be doing a workshop on asking questions about sexual orientation and gender identity in clinical settings to better gather data and to track it in electronic health records. But we also have been working with our partners in government to get questions added to, say, the National Health Interview Survey, which is for the first time piloting a sexual orientation question this year, which is really exciting. And then the PRISM data archive is, as I said, housed at ICPSR at University of Michigan. This makes databases data sets publicly accessible for download, but also we have a restricted data archive for data that cannot be made publicly accessible, but that can be shared among affiliated researchers, both faculty and grad students. The PRISM data archive includes data sets with LGBT-related measures from which LGBT samples can be identified from the general archive. It also includes data sets focused on the LGBT population groups from Pop Center faculty and beyond. It also functions as a portal to LGBT-relevant data sets through the ICPSR General Archive. So this includes data sets that aren't necessarily public health data sets, but that could have information in them that can be very useful in public health policy analysis, planning, and so on. So an example would be some of the public opinion research that comes out of University of Chicago, the NORC National Opinion Research Center, which is included in the ICPSR General Archive. This includes survey data that looks at the American public's attitudes toward gay people. There's this thing called the feeling thermometer, where they talk about how warm or cold they feel toward particular demographic groups, including gays and lesbians or homosexuals. It also includes attitudes toward gay rights policy issues like non-discrimination laws, marriage equality, etc. And it also has data on like looking at different age cohorts. So how are older Americans compared to middle-aged and younger Americans on their attitudes toward gay people and gay rights issues, racial differences, etc., in people's attitudes. And it also has data on people's understandings of HIV and how HIV is transmitted. And what these data show us is that actually older Americans tend to be more disapproving of homosexuality, morally disapproving, less likely to be supportive of equal rights for gay people. They also tend to have a lot of misconceptions about how HIV is transmitted, which kind of date back to some of the misconceptions that were widespread in the 1980s, like, you know, that you can get HIV from touching a doorknob or from, you know, saliva or from sharing utensils in a dining hall that have been somebody else used at a previous meal, which of course is not true, but these are widely held, particularly among older Americans. And this is all relevant when you start thinking of older LGBT people and older people with HIV, whether they're gay or straight, going into senior centers, long-term care facilities, nursing homes, etc. That's just an example of how some data can be helpful that are not necessarily public health data at first glance. And then we final focus or strategy is training and mentoring the next generation. This involves a pre-doctoral mentoring program, support for student faculty initiated projects, and the Summer Institute in LGBT Population Health, which I'm going to sort of close with. The National Pre-Doctoral Mentoring Program, the first class, included 14 applicants from a wide range of universities around the country. An additional 9 students expressed interest, and 7 were selected by the Faculty Admissions Committee. There are a number of research working groups involving this faculty-student collaboration. They include transgender health, youth and aging issues, lesbian and bisexual women, HIV and other sexual health issues like HPV, LGBT families and households, and queer theory and LGBT research. Please don't ask me about that one. I don't really understand what that's about. But the other ones I can answer questions about. And then we've had a number of faculty student initiated special research gatherings. One looked at resiliency. So much focus, particularly in terms of HIV and STIs with this population, is focused on risk and the disproportionate impact of HIV on gay and bisexual men, African-American gay and bisexual men in particular. And while that's important, it's also important to understand, you know, why is it that more than 90% of gay men in this country don't get HIV? How do we understand, I was talking to someone this morning who's doing a project on LGBT, people who are LGBT who smoke. We know they smoke at higher rates than the straight population, but what do we learn from people who've been able to quit smoking? And how do we learn from that resiliency and strength that has allowed them to quit smoking, stay off cigarettes? We also looked at intersectionality, which is a key theme of the Institute of Medicine report, that it's really important to understand not just sexual orientation and gender identity, but how that intersects with race and ethnicity, and whether you're native-born or an immigrant, and so on and so forth. Let's see. So the Summer Institute. This is a project that looks at population research in LGBT health. We engage in analysis of population health data sets. This is funded by NICHD, as I mentioned at the outset, and involves graduate students and early stage investigators. It involves 4 weeks of an intensive seminars and data analysis training. It's in partnership with ICPSR staff from the University of Michigan, and it's conducted at the Boston University School of Public Health campus, both on the Charles River but also near Boston Medical Center in the South End, sort of Roxbury area. The purpose is to support the development of the next generation of LGBT health population scientists, and to date we've got over 50 graduates from nearly 40 colleges and universities. So these are just some pictures of the first three classes, and I met with the students this summer. It's a great group of students doing some really interesting research, and they're really coming from all over the country, and actually there's a few people from outside the U.S. Who attended this year. And these are some of their disciplines. So they're from a wide range. Most are from, you know, public health, but they're also from a wide range of other social sciences and behavioral sciences. And just to give you an example of a couple of examples of accomplishments, these are some publications, or actually, this is a session at the Population Association of America, which is having its first ever LGBT health session this year. And these are some of the papers that were being presented at that session, written by people who were involved with the Summer Institute, who are students there, or faculty. And then another project that I've been involved with a little bit is there's an analysis of the Youth Risk Behavior Survey pool data set. Very few states ask about sexual orientation, but what the researchers did was they pooled the data from the 7 or 8 states that do ask these questions that allow us to look at lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth compared to heterosexual youth and look at health risk behaviors and getting in fights at school, carrying a weapon to school, things like that. The data were aggregated and analyzed, and there's a special issue of the American Journal of Public Health coming out in the spring that's solely devoted to LGB youth and understanding LGB youth and what to make of these disparities that we see, and it's really exciting. And that was basically a project of the Center for Population Research and LGBT Health. So opportunities that you might want to avail yourselves of, be in touch with me, if I can give you my business card at the end of the session, are accessing the data that we have available online through collaboration with ICPSR, but also internships, postdoc fellowships, and affiliation as a research scientist. So once again, funded by NICHD, there's some information on the grant. Thank you very much for your attention.